This is that other sports shit. Let's go.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, whatever time, whatever place, whatever atmosphere, whatever the vibe is, however you choose to place it, thank you for once again joining us. It is Jesse Thomas, it is Jay Valdez, it is that other sports show. Jesse, we have not done this in a while. What episode is it this year?
16. This is 16.
No shit.
Yeah.
Are we on pace for 32?
I was pleasantly surprised when I was editing the last week's show.
You know, I think we took a lot of the NBA and the summer off last year. We had some good gaps. Even though we tried not to. I don't know if we're having the gaps like we have in previous years, but I can tell you with full confidence, I think we're gonna have a gap next week. I don't think there's anything fucking cooking. And if we're doing our NBA finals takes, which I believe we are, I don't see a reason for us to do any more Heat versus Boston stuff other than we're kissing Boston goodbye, guys. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, it is Tuesday when we're taping this. Game 4 is tonight. Boston versus Miami, and I don't think any of us are giving them much chance. But we'll get to the basketball in a minute. We've got some combat sports to cover, Jesse. We've got some UFC, some free ESPN Plus UFC that was over the weekend. We have Haney versus Loma. You and I both came on here last week and picked Haney, and boy, were we wrong. I mentioned, hey, Loma, maybe Loma has that one last fight, sticks all of the Ukraine on his back and comes out and just delivers. And I also mentioned, as long as Loma doesn't take rounds off, if he comes out not doing the download thing that he does, if you will, he's going to have a lot better chance. And I feel like all those things happen. So we'll touch on that in a minute. Let's start here, Jess. How are you? How was the weather? How you doing?
Man, things are good. Things are good over here. The weather has been insanely nice, even for Oregon standards. I believe it was last week. We had a stretch of 4 or 5 days in a row over 90 degrees, which is crazy. Now, most of y'all, like, if the Jay's down in Fresno, right? And it's just basically like it's hell style temperature there almost like 85% right of the year. See? So here in the Pacific Northwest, where I reside, it's not so bad. I live in what the part of the Pacific Northwest where we call it the Valley. So, I mean, it literally is the valley. I'm surrounded by mountains headed towards the coast in one direction, then headed up towards, you know, the northern, you know, states. And so the weather is a little bit cooler. So when we hit 90, 95, 98 degrees, right here freaks out. So like last week, it was super hot and I got sunburned and rocking that dad bod sunburn, you know, like not showing off the belly,
like
but
outside,
just, you know, just shoulders,
you're
shoulders and arms
on and shit.
Yeah, man, just hanging out, you know, like I would purposely do the thing where I go to work and I know that everybody else that I work with is not as in good a shape as I am. So I'll go there in a really cut off like stringer just to get out of my truck and kind of stretch and like flex a little bit on people.
Fuck yeah.
Hell yeah. That's what summer's all about.
Let me give you a quick rundown, Jess. 88 high today, 84, 84, 83, 85, 86 as we go into the weekend. I will be gone this weekend. I will be leaving Thursday night, spending a few days in Morro Bay. I'll also be up by San Simeon, so I'll be doing ocean shit. I'll be doing Pacific ocean shit. I'll be on the beaches. Toes in the sand, you know, what do they say? Super Sky Point with a little this and a little that. So I'm excited. Jesse, I don't want to spend a ton of time on it because we've spent a lot of time on it and people are still asking about it. So it is a pressing topic. You are a few weeks now out of Twitter and I believe still out of Instagram. update us on what's going on with your social media presence. Where's your head at? How you feeling?
Honestly, I am taken back in a good way that so many people have asked, because yes, I honestly did not think that anybody would care. Twitter is such a large world, right? Like,
yes,
billions of people are on Twitter. Like, almost the entire world that has some sort of Wi-Fi connection has Twitter. And, you know, to have people be like, hey, man, where's Jesse at? Is he doing okay? Hey, where's that JTT81? Is he good? Or whatever. Like, that stuff's cool, man. And I appreciate all you guys reaching out like that. I'm doing good, man. Headspace is super clear, super clean. I have hit up Reddit a few times. Thanks, Jay, for that little pearl of a suggestion. Man, you don't want to get lost in that world either, man. I'm telling you.
See, it's tricky, right? Because it's just like any social media type of presence where you can stay on some clean streets. It's like Vegas. You can stay on some clean streets. You can see the bright lights. You can see the shows. You can get what you want. But you make that wrong turn and it gets messy, it gets ugly, it gets violent, it gets like very, very dark. And so, you know, it's funny, quick Reddit tangent. I do way less social media, period. I went on this tangent, I guess, a week or two ago already, so I'm not going to do it again and do Dog Chase Tail. But I used to do a lot more Reddit when I worked in an office, because I was at a desktop and I would just look at Reddit like hours at a time. And I have the Reddit app, but I don't look at it as much. There's maybe only two or three subreddits that I'll check out maybe every few days, one of them being the Fresno Reddit, another one being Squared Circle Reddit, because I just can't get enough pro wrestling, right? So if I can't get my juice off of Twitter when it comes to pro wrestling, I'm gonna go to Reddit. I'm gonna find a way to get my Dave Meltzer behind the paywall, Sean Ross set behind the paywall goods. I'm going to find a way. Listen, I'm not paying for these motherfuckers. So quick shout out, Jess. And while we're staying here, to Smash Squad MMA, he was checking on you. He wanted to make sure you were good. He sent you a DM. So shout out Smash Squad MMA. Make sure you follow them on Twitter. And just the usual cast of characters checking on you. So
the homies.
Everyone's glad you're doing well. I told everybody it's going to probably be a few months before you come back, a few months. You said it on last week's show. You're looking for right around the football season, preseason. Yeah. So give us some marker here, Jess. Are you thinking July? Are you thinking August? What are you thinking?
If I can stretch it out the furthest, it'll be August. So it'll be like training camp, like preseason.
Yeah,
stuff.
August, we're already in preseason. So yeah. July is when you really start getting.
Yeah. So end of July, probably like maybe mid July, you know, something like that. I'll wait till after the holiday, at least until after the 4th of July. So
you
I can
guys, that's like a strong, what is it? That's like a strong 6 weeks.
You know what the problem is?
On top of the 2 weeks you've already done.
here's the problem is I've had a lot of time to think now that I've not been like squarely doom scrolling on Twitter and, you know, so much. And so I feel like I'm starting to formulate like my own opinions on life.
Oh, yes.
And so now I feel like if I jump into Twitter,
you're fucking unplugged.
I feel like I will jump back unplugged, and then everybody's going to hate me because they're going to be like, man, he wasn't like this before. Now his opinion's so strong on X, Y, and Z. I'm not really sure what's going on.
I'm not following that motherfucker. But at this point, you don't care. But at this point, you don't care. What the only suggestion I can give, Jess, is
please,
if you know, muting people is kind of fucked up, but it works. You know what I mean? I don't want to say it's kind of fucked up, because if you don't have any type of real relationship with this person outside of social media, muting them is a polite way of saying, I don't want to unfollow you, but for right now, I just don't want to hear whatever noise that you're bringing. I just don't want, like, what you're bringing to my timeline right now is not informative to me in a good way. It's not funny. It's not a big pair of tits or ass. So I'm just going to mute you. I'm just going to get you out of here for now.
How is our number one Team Toss follower doing? He was full of tits and ass on.
Are you talking about our boy Jimmy Evans?
Jimmy Evans. Where's
hornier
Jimmy?
Hornier than ever.
Hornier than ever. I love that guy.
Shout out Jimmy Evans.
Stay horny, brother. Stay horny.
Yeah, no, listen. He's still retweeting porn. I don't know how he's like voting every day for these porn awards. Like one of the when are the actual porn awards? 2024?
I don't know, but one of these sluts are gonna get voted in due to Jimmy E. And I hope that they give him a shout out on their Twitter page because this guy votes. Even before I got off, he was voting every day.
I trip out, you know, he's still voting.
Jimmy,
I trip out on Jimmy. Well, he gets the most random replies, but he never replies back, which to me is kind of a gangster move.
That is because, kind of gangster.
Because I always feel obligated to reply back, even if it's just like an LOL or like a fucking GIF or a laughing
emoji or something.
I just feel like I have to reply to acknowledge that you acknowledge me. So let me, you know, it's almost like a... It's like a, you know, it's how do you say like a polite way to close out an email exchange? It's like one of those. It's just a way to close out your social media exchange. And but Jimmy just he'll say some shit and then he'll get a reply from a porn star and like I don't even think he likes it to like show the respect of like I'm acknowledging you by liking the tweet. He's just like, nah, I'm going to keep him moving. I got other porn stars to vote
great for. Great gangster, Jimmy E, doing his thing.
We love him. We love him. Shout out Big Jimmy Evans. He went to, I think either Super Mario Brothers. He went to a movie and he posted himself at the movie. And I'm like, my man's getting out having a fun.
Whoa, he posted pictures of himself?
Him at a movie, like in front of a movie poster. But it wasn't Fast X. It wasn't like anything that cool.
Yeah.
I think it was either a Marvel movie or Super Mario Brothers, which I am dying to see, by the way.
And you should see it, everybody. Everybody should go see Super Mario Brothers. It's a good movie.
I think I told you last week. I finally watched Wakanda Forever, and now I'm moving on to either Thor or the recent Doctor Strange. So
I still have to see Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Oh, so good.
Gotta watch it.
Not to get too deep.
I might go see it tonight. I don't know.
Should. What the fuck else are you doing? You got nothing else going on.
I'm not doing Twitter, man.
You're not
doom
scrolling.
Guardians.
You're not doom scrolling. I mean, you got to fucking watch the Celtics get beat by 28 on the road by Jimmy Buckets.
Hey. Jimmy Buckets.
So let's – I want to start here, if you don't mind, Jess, because the takes are fresh in my mind because I just watched it again. Hanny Lomachenko. We mentioned last week we both thought trending up versus trending down, if you will.
Yes.
I started seeing some tweets from boxing heads whose opinions I respect that were picking Loma as we got close to the fight. Of course, after we taped the show. So I didn't start to waver on my pick as much as I started to second guess it. And Loma fucking delivered. First of all, shout out to the fight that was before Loma versus Haney. I wish I could remember who it was. I believe it was a Valdez. But it was just an old school Mexican versus Mexican, just two dudes biting down on their mouthpieces and not a lot of jabs, but a lot of hooks and a lot of uppercuts and just violence. So shout out to those two dudes. But Loma Haney, Jess, let me tell you, I don't know if you watched it or not. When I watched it the first time, when I watched it Saturday night at a house full of people, I had three of my buddies over. We were one of them's a Laker fan. So we were literally looking at free agents in 2023 on our phones and trying to figure out how to fix the Lakers because they had just lost their first game at home and now they were down 3-0. So I had one eye on the Loma versus Haney fight. I was looking at the phone. We were making fun of my buddy. I wasn't really watching it. But what I can say was, I wasn't giving Haney any rounds, and I mean none. As I was watching the fight, looking up, looking back, looking around, and as I was watching with my buddies, when our attention was brought to the screen, it was because Loma was serving Haney, because Loma was fucking just being the better active fighter, and Haney just wasn't getting it done. So after I throw everybody out of my house and I go and I start reading Twitter and reading the reactions of people. But not only that, the decision went to Haney. 7-5, 7-5. Yeah. And I think there was an 8-4 in there for Haney as well. And I remember talking with that, you know, the dudes I was watching the fight with. And I said to one of my buddies, did Haney win one round? Did you give him? And one of these guys I've watched, I don't know, fucking 50 fights with. I watch a lot of combat sports with this dude. And he's like, nah, man, I didn't give him one. So I thought, you know what, between reading some reactions on Twitter, and, you know, you are going to get one out of 10 cats that's like, no, I actually thought Haney won the fight. And I don't think that they're zagging or just being Haney fans as much as they're just going, yeah, there's just a lot of close rounds in there, and you gave them to Lona, I gave them to Haney. So I texted you this morning, Jess. I says, hey, listen, we're thinking about rolling the show out. I got to watch this fight. I rewatched it again. Keen eye. I went Loma 8-4. That's where I was.
Jeez.
I think I could have went Loma 9-3, but I kept it 8-4. I think Haney won one of the opening rounds, like 2 or 3. I think Haney won one of the middle rounds, maybe 6 or 7. I think he might have won like 8. And then Loma just takes over. He wins like 9, 10, 11, 12. Like, he closes the show on Haney. Now, I will say, Jess, there were some close rounds. But when I'm looking at the close rounds, I'm looking more at the punch output by Loma, which is higher in my opinion. I'm looking at the ring generalship, and Loma was just fucking cutting the ring off. And I look at more, I'm scoring more of the punch output, the body work, than I am Haney in sections of the fight being masterful with his counter punching. Even as masterful as he was in spots with his counter punching, I don't think he ever really hurt Loma or had Loma in trouble. As opposed to there's parts in this fight, I watched the first night and I was like, I think Haney's in trouble. And I watch it again today, and I'm like, I think he's in trouble here. That's where I'm at. That's how I scored it. I did this take a few months ago. Never go back and watch a fight and try and rescore it. But again, I didn't really watch it this first time. I was fucking off. I had Doritos in my hand. Like, I just was not watching this fight. So rewatching it, I'm going to give it Loma. Loma was one of the most respectful responses and answers when he was interviewed post fight, where he basically was like, I'm not talking about this decision. I want to talk about what's going on in my country. I want to talk about there's worse shit going on than this decision. I'm not worried about it. There's other shit to talk about. So credit to Loma for that. Any thoughts, Jess? Jump in here. You got anything for me?
Well, I watched highlights from like different, you know, YouTube people putting, you know, boxing folks putting on highlights. This one guy's highlight caught me off guard because it sounded like he was potentially like a Haney guy. Mm-hmm. And he was like, Haney wins, unifies the major titles. He, you know, keeps his undefeated streak. And then he went on to show a bunch of clips of basically Lomachenko like beating the shit out of him, like for however many rounds. And then at the end, you know, he has this little clip where he explains, you know, like, you know, maybe there was something in the bag, you know, type of deal. I didn't watch the fight. I like Lomachenko. I think that, you know, he's a great guy. You know, he's super honorable. You know, when we speak about combat sports, you know, we talk about fighters.
Loma's a fighter.
Yeah, I believe that there should be some sort of honor involved in that type of athletics. And Lomachenko is a fighter's fighter. He's very responsible, humble, and very honorable guy. And you could tell because some interview, somebody actually mentioned to him like, hey, Loma, do you feel like this was a fix? And he was like, you know what? I'm not talking about this right now. Mm-hmm. And he had to say that several times throughout, you know, the post-match interviews.
Yeah, he was
getting
jammed up. They kept going in, they kept going in, and he's just like, oh, I'm not touching it.
So, I mean, shout out again, like, just in regards to what you just said, like, shout out to Lomachenko and his team for just kind of avoiding the negativity about the fight itself and just jumping into more, you know, like positive things, you know, and speaking about his country and how, you know, things can be worse than losing a fight here in the States for like millions and millions of dollars. You know, you could be losing your mm-hmm. life for like nothing in another country, you know,
and what people
invaded,
would
like,
consider a senseless war.
So, you know, shout out to him for just being a very respectful guy. I know that in the back of his mind, he wanted to lash out and just say some shit because why not? Like, There's a couple people that I do follow or was following on Twitter and so on that were like, you know, boxing connoisseurs along with yourself, obviously. And when I hear a guy like you who's watched thousands of boxing matches and you sit there and say that the fight wasn't even close, like it wasn't even like, you know, it wasn't like a Haney mix. Sounds to me like you basically handed the fight to Loma, like virtually with, you know, without having to even think too much about it. But then for him to lose the fight, I'm not going to say that there was a fix or nothing was in the bag, but I'm just saying that, you know, shady shit happens in boxing.
Yeah, boxing politics.
The best part was after the fight, Haney was being talked to, and they were like, so, Mr. Haney, what's going on next? You know, you had this big, incredible victory over Lomachenko. You've unified the titles. Like, what's next for you? And he's like, I'm going to go where the money is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, you didn't even win this fight. Like, you can go where the money's at, but, like, I don't know who's going to pay you. And I don't believe that Haney is a big enough name, even with that fat record.
The draw.
Even with that fat record he's got, I don't believe that he's a big enough name to go chasing bags quite yet.
I love where your head's at here. So a few things. I love Stevenson coming into the ring right after the fight, while the fighters are still in the ring. And he's like, yeah, I don't know what the judges saw. Loma clearly won that fight. When you see the post-fight interviews of other fighters that are all either friends of Haney and won't acknowledge that Haney lost, or people that have no dog in the fight, and they're like, yeah, I don't know what the judges saw, but I thought Loma won that fight pretty easily. That to me is always really telling. And it's one thing, again, when there's a close fight, you know me, Jess, I have no problem saying, yeah, that was just a really close fight. This didn't feel like a close fight to me. It didn't feel one-sided per se, but it felt like there was definitely a winner and a loser. And the winner was Loma and the loser was Haney. With regards to Haney being a draw, I mean, there is the Stevenson fight. There are some fights that can be made. But you have a very good point. Is Haney a big box office draw yet? Or does he need to rematch Loma? If I'm him in his camp, I say, hell no. Try and find me another big fight, or try and find me anything. try and give me something stylistically where I'm not getting touched like it was by Loma. But again, I'm not sure where they go. They do have some options. It'll be interesting to see. You're always going to – every fighter, I feel like, has that controversial decision on the record, whether it's Mayweather. You could just go up and down the list of all fighters. Every one of them has that fight where you go, yeah, that one I think went the other way. Yeah, that one was close. So it doesn't surprise you that Haney finally got one. And like you said, Jess, when you start going up to the highest level of competition, elite levels of competition, you're truly testing yourself. This is a good moment for Haney to go back and look at that tape and go, all right, this is what I think I did right. This is what I think I did wrong. Am I truly ready for a Stevenson or someone like that? And again, time will tell here. We'll keep it moving.
You know that his camp's going to try to get that together pretty quick, because after a fight that close and everything and the controversy, the only thing to quell the controversy is to get another fight.
I think it's his dad or his uncle heals because he got hit with a bottle on the way out because the crowd was not happy with that decision. Shout out his trainer who gets hit with a bottle, goes on the microphone, is interviewed backstage and says, yeah, you know, even though you hit me with a bottle, whoever you were, God bless you. Like, my man, you just got hit with a bottle from the audience. Like, it's 1997 WCW, and you're fucking Scott. You know what I mean? You're the NWO in the ring, and everybody hates you. Like, you just literally got hit with a fucking glass bottle. All right, Jess. Let's keep it moving. Let's keep it moving here. I want to touch on this UFC a little bit. You watched a lot more than I did. I did watch the Joaquin Buckley fight, looking back at some of the card. I missed our girl Loopy's fight, but I do see that she did win. So once again, the power of Loopy continues to move up the ranks. I think there's really two fights that we can pick on here, Jess. I saw a lot of highlights, and more importantly, I saw a Shabazzian getting absolutely dragged on social media here. I think we were saying here, or we scratched the surface lightly here on Shabazzian and one of these, I think, you know, he's one of these Ronda Rousey proteges, if you will, that never really figured it out or got to that next level. I have a little bit of a take here, Jess, but I want to let you go ahead and start here. Give me any thoughts you have on this card.
The card was super basic. It's your basic, you know, I'm going to throw this, you know, half-assed sloppy card together just to kind of keep people halfway interested with the next pay-per-view coming up, which is, I believe, the only saving grace was the fact that Mackenzie Dern won her fight and she won it dominantly, and then that there were, you got a couple of crazy knockouts like the Joaquin Buckley win, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. And then for my personal own, like, you know, like of my is that Loopy came in short notice catchweight fight, she still gets the win, so she gets another notch on her belt. You know what? Just keep moving up that ladder, Loopy. I like it.
You know, going back to Shabazzian, and you and I mentioned this before we started really rolling the reels, if you will. I think about that Cron Gracie fight that was on a pay-per-view a few weeks ago and how bad he looked and how one-dimensional he looked. And I look at Shabazzian here, who had basically one round of gas in him before he completely shot his load and then just was kind of there to get beat up and knocked out and just going through the motions, if you will, glorified sparring match. And I wonder, how can we still consider the UFC like the highest level of competition when it comes to combat sports, but then you got guys like this sliding in? Now, I guess the answer, Jess, is, well, they know the right promoter. Well, they know, you know, it ain't what you know. It's who you know sometimes when it comes to the UFC. But you just can't have fighters looking this bad at the highest level, especially on a pay-per-view. But if you're the co-main event or you're, you know, you're third up the ladder here on a plus card, you just can't be that bad anymore. I'm sorry. Now, it was one thing if Shabazzian's hurt, and it's kind of like the TJ thing where it's like, well, fuck, I'm hurt. If I don't fight, I don't get paid. So I got to at least go out there and give it a shot because I got shit to pay. But this to me just reeks of stink. Jess, give me some thoughts.
So I'm going to disagree, and respectfully, of course. I think that a fight like this with Shabazzian, you know, him and Anthony Hernandez, who, by the way, no one even really knows who he is.
You called him Brooklyn Brawler earlier.
I'm going to start calling him the Brooklyn Brawler. He's actually on a 3-fight winning streak now. So, like, should we start talking, like, title fights or something? Like, what's going on here? It's crazy. This is a perfect fight for this fight card because no one's even really watching. And if Shabazzian was to have been able to put together some sort of offense, which unfortunately he was not, then people would have probably gotten to see a really cool submission win and over the Brooklyn Brawler. Instead, what happened was Shabazzian, like you said earlier, shot his load in the first probably 45 seconds of the fight. Couldn't get takedowns because he was already so damn tired. You're a Brazilian jiu-jitsu specialist. How are you not being able to get takedowns whenever the fuck you want to take someone down? I don't understand this. Damian Maia could be half dead and still get a trip takedown.
I think these guys are just 2-1-D, Jess. I think that...
But Damian Maia was 1-D too. I mean, my point is, like, this fight is good for a card like this because he's not... to me, Shabazzian's not a specialist. He's not a great BJJ practitioner. Damian Maia, he's not some of these other guys that we've seen. He's not Nogueira. He's not these guys. He's good. He can be really good. And he's just good enough to put on a card like this.
Yeah, I don't even know if he's – honestly, Justin, I don't even know if he's good. That's my point is I don't know.
That's all we heard all week. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu specialist Edmund Shabazzian.
We've seen the UFC hype machine, and promotional machine, be able to make good fighters look great, great fighters look amazing, and credit to their editing team, they can put together sizzle reels that'll get you kind of drinking the Kool-Aid. But no, I've been all out on Shabazzian for a while, and I just think this to me isn't even like a Charles Oliveira thing or like a Johnny Walker thing that we were talking about last week, where it's like, well, he's trading wins and losses. I feel like he just loses a lot. Like, he'll lose three and then he'll win one and then he'll lose two. And I don't see Shabazzian as a top 15 contender. And I think he would be great in Bellator or in, I mean, say PFL, because I'm trying to, I don't want to devalue the PFL after I put him over last week, but
he's 1-4, by the way. Oh, he's 1-4 in his last five, by the way.
Oh, stinks. Jess, give me some thoughts on the main event here. What were your thoughts on I love Angela Hill. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I open my phone up. I open social media up, and I see how she's looking coming out in the third round. She's got the disfigured face. It's not good. Give me some thoughts on this fight. Which, by the way, you were ready to put Duren on a boat and send her out of the UFC. You had her as potential loser leaves town fight.
Yeah. So Duren proved. I think she proved a lot of people wrong, at least for this fight. I mean, I don't want to say that Hill is like a gatekeeper, but I'm going to say that she's kind of a gatekeeper. Angela Hill is good enough to beat anybody, but not just on every occasion. Like, she's gonna lose some, she's gonna win some, she's gonna look good in some of her losses, she's gonna look bad in some of her wins. And in this fight, this was like a do or die, not necessarily, I'm definitely being over dramatic about it, but it was sort of a do or die for Mackenzie Dern to come in and look really good, a complete package fighter. And she came in, and she, right off the bat, just steamrolled Hill with some lefts and rights. Just came in, pop in the glove. One of the announcers had talked about Mackenzie Dern had lost weight, some extra weight. She cut extra weight so she could add on would be muscle. And ooh, she like did that. Look a lot firmer. Like, she was definitely thicker, like, in really, a muscular way. She's always
had a strong-ass back, too.
Yeah, so she comes in looking really strong, real healthy. And in normal Mackenzie Dern fights, if she doesn't finish it quick with some sort of submission, typically we see the gas tank. Her gas tank did not end. Angela Hill fought to the very best of her ability. She did not give up. She did not, I mean, Mackenzie Dern, class Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist, she had Hill's arm probably 13 different times in that fight and could not finish it because Hill was just a fighter. It was a brilliant fight for Dern. It was one of those fights that does not make Hill look bad at all, because Hill just fought her ass off to just stay in the fight. No quitting that girl. Man, she's a chick, man. I love Angela Hill. I can't wait to see her keep fighting. And by the way, I didn't even know, she has the most appearances in UFC history in her weight class.
Yeah, no, I believe it. I believe it.
I had no idea how many.
What's she at? 15 fights? 20 fights in the UFC?
23 fights.
Fuck. I thought 15 would be wow.
23 appearances.
Well, let me say this. And I am agreeing with everything you're saying here. But one thing that really sticks out to me is she's, like you said, she can look great in great in losses and bad in wins. And she's had such a unique career. And I've always loved following her. I wonder, I hate to say, you know, that her time has passed or her window has shut. We're going to be doing a lot of window has the window shut takes here coming around the corner with LeBron. But I'm more, you know, I want to say this to kind of piggyback off of your statement one more time. She's in that gatekeeper area where I think she can beat or upset a lot of people outside of the top 10, depending on how high they're trending up. And I think she can give fits to a lot of people in that perennial 6, 7, 8, 9 spot. But I think once you start getting her in there with the top 5, and she's also fighting a lot of girls that are cutting a lot of weight and are just naturally stronger than her, that's when she's always been given fits. She's always had issues on the mat with bigger, stronger girls. And that seems to be always how she's lost fights. I can't recall Angela getting knocked out a ton. Maybe once or twice, but to me it always seems like she's just getting manhandled in decisions. You know, just grapple fucked, if you will. So
well, and even in this fight, I mean, I thought for sure, like, I was myself. Like, if Mackenzie Dern had me in this spot, I would probably give up. Because, like, she had she had Hill flattened out several times, even posted on her side, and was just dropping hammers. And
a lot of clean shots
were getting through. The referee was being super generous to Angela Hill, not stopping the fight.
He's like, this is a main event. I'm not stopping it.
Nah, he did not stop it. So shout out to that ref, man. I don't know who it was, but
the ref's like, there's 3 hours before this Lakers Nuggets game starts. We got time, girls.
But Mackenzie Dern looked different, hungrier, and her again. Two biggest takes from her game that night was her weirdly profound striking. And I mean, when she hit Hill, like, there was that, it was kind of like when Chuck Liddell would kind of snap at a guy and you could still hear the thud, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's touching
you. You would hear when Dern would pop her, you could hear the thud. That thud to me is like when you punch a wall, like you're really snapping into it. Dern has, I don't know where she's picking it up from, but her punch game, her striking game, definitely showed crazy improvement that night. Second thing to take away from Mackenzie Dern is her gas tank. I mean, maybe now that she's had her baby, she's a little bit, you know, past the post-baby stuff. She's back into fighting shape. Maybe now that's why we're seeing it. But Lord, her gas tank did not run out. She was throwing... I think somebody in the middle said the most volume punches she had thrown in a fight was 72. And by the, I want to say the third round, she'd already thrown 92 strikes.
She threw over 20 more
before the end of her fight than she's thrown in her career, like in a single fight. So she was throwing volume.
That's interesting because, again, like you said, it's rare that you get a fighter that's fought for this long getting – you see an increase in their volume. It's usually more of a decrease. I can tell by looking at Angela after the fight. I'm telling you, my girl looked worse for wear. She probably still got an ice pack on the side of that head of hers. Jess, have we touched on all the combat sports? You and I were trying to figure out. I don't believe there's any fights worth really discussing this weekend. I hate saying that, and then 2 days later, I'm looking at social media. I'm like, fuck, we missed talking about this fight, and we passed it.
Kai Car of France, his headliner is coming up next weekend, not this
and then
weekend.
The following
so we have some time. And the following weekend, we get Amanda Nunez, pay-per-view. So we got a week without some combat sports, unless, of course, Bellator's got a card or something like that or whatever. Yeah, or maybe Slap Fight's got some shit going on.
Yeah, time.
Knuckle Boxing's got some
shit going on. My favorite.
Oh, I just found out that there's ass slapping championships now.
How do I? Is that on Fight TV? How do I sign up for that?
I found this through TikTok. I'm scrolling through TikTok.
Oh,
because the videos are great.
You really have reached the fucking bottom of the barrel. You're like, I can't do Twitter, but I'll do fucking TikTok.
All I can do is just watch videos. I'm like, yeah, I feel a little bit better. But I literally was scrolling through, and there's ass-slapping championships. These two women, with extremely round badunkadunks.
Yes.
In, like, bathing suits and all sorts of stuff, are taking turns like the slap championships the guys have, except you're slapping an ass cheek. Bam.
Do they powder their hands with like talk before they?
Yeah, they got the caulk going on. They got the one chick. She's sitting back there like warming it up. Like she's like,
is Forrest Griffin there to catch them in case they get knocked out? He catches them like, oh, she's dead. She's dead.
Where's Tito? I feel like Tito should head this up.
He should be like the CEO of it.
He, yes.
All right. I think it's okay. So it's time.
Let's go.
All right. We're moving on.
We
are officially burying the Boston Celtics. And maybe I'm zagging and Jess is going to zig here, but Jess, do you think there is any chance that the Boston Celtics come back and win the East? They are down 3-0.
Well, they don't come back and win. I think that they win tonight.
Okay. So, gentlemen, sweep?
I do. So I don't think it's a straight sweep. I think that Miami is going to have to fight a little bit for that, you know. But I don't believe that there's been any team in NBA history that has ever come back from down three games ever.
So with that said, and I want to try and butter this up a little bit. So with that said, Celtics were down 3-2 twice, I believe, last year to Milwaukee and to Miami. They were down 3-2 this year, came back against Philly. So, and give me a percentage chance that Boston can come back and win this. Would I sound fucked up if I thought 5 was high?
I do kind of feel like when I said it, it felt high.
I'm gonna percent.
They got a 3% chance that they can somehow manage to come back from three games and win.
We just got to take it one game at a time. Bullshit line that everybody says. But I guess What else are you supposed to say when you are down, right? It's, oh, I just got to take it one game at a time from this point on. I'm burying the Boston Celtics. I'm going to stick with you. I'm going to say 0%. I think history rings the bell here, and no chance. I don't even think Boston has two wins in them. You don't think they win tonight?
You think it's a sweep?
I think if they win tonight, I think they get beat at home the next game. But it's just so fucking hard. And this is where I'm going to start. I think that coach has completely lost that fucking team. And Jess, you know this. I have been beating that fucking coach like a pinata this entire postseason. So nothing's fucking changing here. I'm not coming off of that. This guy should be on the fucking the unemployment line the moment the fucking clock hits 00 and they're eliminated. I would have scored him out. Take him off the bus like they did Lane Kiffin and get him the fuck out of it. I can't recall a time that a team this good has looked this checked out and had a coach that was just this content with it. And maybe he's not content, but it looks like it. He just looks lost, Jess. He gives me lost vibes. He gives me deer in the headlight vibes. He just gives me a feeling of I'm over my fucking head. I took on a project that is just over my fucking head, and I ain't ready, and there ain't nothing I can see in these huddles. Me clapping it up and fucking grabbing the fucking, the whiteboard ain't going to change a goddamn thing with this team. I think he was relying on his vets to do their thing, and he's just kind of there making sure the guys are getting their timeouts when they will, and there to advise guys when he can't. But in regards to leadership, this guy has fucking failed them like you would not believe. I mean, I cannot begin to explain how badly this man has failed them. I mean, there's no fucking excuse to me where how badly he's failed them. So I start there. I understand Tatum has been so inconsistent with he's just five quarters of brilliance, followed by two quarters of non-existence, followed by a quarter of giddy up, followed by a quarter of just Jimmy Butler giving him the business. It's just, he's too fucking sporadic. And Jaylen Brown, he just doesn't seem like an all-NBA player anymore. It's weird to me. It's weird to me, and I think I said this the last time we talked about Boston, how Marcus Smart seems to be the guy that wants to take, that doesn't want to defer. And to me, Brown is just deferring. And there's times that I see Tatum, and he's deferring. And they just – and Smart, who's probably the fourth best offensive player on that team, if not the fifth, is just like, nah, fuck it, I'll shoot these threes. Nah, fuck it, I'll jack this shit up. Nah, you're going to give me space? I'll shoot this. I'll make a few of them. I'll make 3 out of 10. I'm clearly I'm not at a loss of words, but – I am befuddled with how badly this team has collapsed. And, you know, it's, to me, I don't want to take anything away from the Heat, and we've been hearing Heat culture for weeks now, but they just really, they remind me of that Pistons team. And I know that Pistons team had two all-stars, three, really, if you want to count Sheed. I don't know if Sheed was an all-star at that point anymore, but they just, you know, the same way that that Detroit team had Rip, who could rip your heart out and hit shots and be an incredible playmaker and make plays on defense. And the same way they had Big Ben Wallace just eating up the inside. Now, I understand that Bam's not the defensive presence that Ben Wallace was, but that motherfucker makes plays, and he alters shots at the basket. He alters shots at the basket, and he just makes guys think twice about going to the hole. And Jimmy's Jimmy. I mean, Jimmy's just playing at another level where it's wild to me how Giannis is eliminated, Embiid is eliminated, and you look at, like, and now LeBron is eliminated, AD's eliminated, Steph's eliminated, and now you look at everything and you go, damn, are the two best players in the league Jimmy and Jokic? Or is that just like a fucking hot take? I don't know. I'm a big show up when it matters guy. You showing up on a Tuesday night against, not to pick on your Blazers, but the Blazers, you know, in February, that to me don't really mean much of shit when you throw up a 40 and a 20.
Yeah.
As opposed to what Jimmy's doing now, what Joker's doing now, what Jamal Murray's doing now. Like, that's a different game. Give me some thoughts on the Celtics here, Jess.
So when the weird stuff went down with Ime Udoka and, like, he was bagging, mm-hmm. like, the assistant lady or whatever, like, so honestly, like, I don't know what the – maybe they were looking to get rid of him, because honestly, that doesn't seem like a very fireable offense. I don't know. I'm not a business guy, so I don't know.
That's tricky, Jesse, now. And I can tell you on a corporate side, you don't mix – You just don't. You don't.
You definitely shouldn't. But and I guess it's probably like power versus, you know, like people.
And people are married. People are married. It's just an all around bad look corporate life.
So getting rid of Udoka was one thing, and I think that the players connected well with him, though. And
No, 1,000,000%. You are right here, and this is one of the reasons, if not the key reason. I hate to put that much onus on coaching, but there's a cause and effect here.
Yes,
He left. They scrambled for a coach. They should have stuck fucking Brad Stevens in there. He wanted to defer, and here we are.
So the head coach that they have now, I feel like that was part of the scramble. I think that they went around, and some higher-up guys were talking to the Tatums and the Browns in the locker room and basically asking, like, you know, we can go get somebody from the outside and bring them in. And I think that the guys in that locker room were like, nah, man, we're pretty family cultured people here. Like, let's keep it in house. If we can, let's keep it in house.
Mm-hmm.
I think somehow that was the decision. They couldn't find anybody reasonable enough to actually head coach. So they found this dude and was like, hey man, we're just going to stick you here. We're going to call you the head coach. You're going to carry the whiteboard around with the nice fat black pen. You're going to mark X's and O's. But truthfully, the players have been doing this now for 5-6 years, if not longer. They know the game plan. They know the offense really well.
Yeah, like a professional here.
So these guys are going to run on the court. They're going to call the plays. You're just going to yell things at the refs and on the court to make it look like you're doing something. And I think that that's where his uninterest is in the game, is I don't think that he's connected. Not only is he not connected to the players in that locker room, but he's not really connected to the actual game that's being played anyway. So he does kind of have this nonchalant, like, oh, yeah, we're down 3-0, but, you know, one game at a time, guys. That's all it takes, just one game at a time. Climb back into this thing. He gives the old, like, you know, adages that have been around for 200 years and stuff. And that's just kind of, like, his role. You were right on the head with Tatum. Tatum will look absolutely amazing one night. And then the very next night, he'll shit the bed for at least the first half, or maybe he'll continue and look good through the first half and then look bad in the second half. Jaylen Brown looks like he looks disinterested as well. He doesn't look like a guy who's even happy to be in the Eastern Conference Finals, like playing for another chance to go to the finals. If you're a player, and now I have been watching way too many like 1980s, 1990s, early 2000s NBA basketball clips, okay? So I'm talking old heads. I've been listening to old heads for like the last month. And you know what these old heads say? If you ain't in it for the championship, you're in this game for the wrong damn reason and you shouldn't be here. That's what the Patrick Ewings of the world said, the David Robinsons of the world, the Hakeem Olajuwons, the Jordans, the Barkleys, the Isaiah Thomases, like, you know, the Tracy McGrady's, the Kobe's, like all these cats, all these old head cats were like, if you ain't in it for the ring, you shouldn't be here. And these players these days, a lot of them don't look like they want the ring as much as they want the bag. And I'm not saying Jaylen Brown even looks like he wants the bag. He just don't look like he wants to be there at all.
Which is fair. That's a fair that's a fair assessment. I think disinterested is a fair appraisal, if you will, when you say he just looks fucking disinterested in sections and points. And maybe it's because he knows, okay, this is Tatum ISO, so there's no reason for me to do anything other than get out of his
way. That's a good point.
Maybe let me just get out of his way. But the Tatum ISO, Brown ISO, it don't work at this. It don't work at the highest level. You've got to play team basketball when you're at the absolute highest level. And this is why you've got the Miami Heat, who got a bunch of selfless players who give a flying fuck if Max Strauss goes for 28 and Bam Adebayo goes for 8, but he's got 15 rebounds and 3 blocks, you know what I mean? Like in key plays. It's so wild to me. And Jess, you know, when the series really ended, and it's been pointed on, and I, you know, I know you're not on Twitter anymore, but I was on a motherfucking soapbox screaming this, is when the Boston Celtics player whose name escapes me started talking shit to Jimmy when they were up 10.
Avery.
It's not Avery Bradley. You're gonna say that's not Avery Bradley. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head. Is it Williams? Grant Williams?
Yes, Grant Williams.
He hits a. This guy has played no meaningful minutes at all in the series. Hits a shot on Jimmy. Starts barking at Jimmy, and Jimmy literally gives him the "all right, motherfucker" look. Like you. They say don't poke a bear, and you poke a fucking bear.
A big bear.
Don't wake a sleeping giant. You woke a fucking sleeping giant. You want to do that when there's 30 seconds left in the fourth quarter? That's cool. You don't do, and you're up 10. You don't do that when there's still so much valuable time left in the game. So what does Jimmy do? Jimmy takes him to the basket and then does that "you're too small for me" gesture. In a playoff game, national television, literally takes the ball down the next possession, goes to the basket, scores, and does a "no, you're too small for me" gesture. That is fucking hilarious. And then he just takes over. And then Miami takes over. And then they feed off of Jimmy's energy and almost like his heel turn. Like they feed on it. And now all of a sudden, you've just got a fucking arena rocking. You got a bunch of people with their fucking jaws on the floor. It's an absolute mess. I don't know, and we love to do this, Jess, right? I don't know what Boston does next year other than fire their coach, because I am truly of this opinion, Jess. If you are going to trade a all-star / potential superstar, you better be getting that value back. Because if you let go of a Jaylen Brown and you get back fucking Wiggins and Jordan Poole, and none of those guys pan out, and Brown's, you know, in Golden State putting up 28 and 8 every night, that's an enormous L. They don't have Danny Ainge there anymore, the master negotiator, to go, "nah, fuck that. I'll sit on Brown, and we'll figure it out." And that's what, if I'm a Boston fan, that's what would worry me a little bit, is what is truly the future here? Are we going to be able to get these two guys to fucking figure it out? We were in a finals last year. tied 2-2. We were two games away from a championship. And our roster got better. Or is it time for us to say, all right, it's time for Brown to go one way, and we're just going to fucking put all of our eggs in the Tatum basket and see what happens. The thing that really – and we'll get to the Lakers next here. The thing that really throws me off of trying to trade Brown is he's still really young. He's still under 30 years old. He's like 26 or something stupid, which is crazy if you think about it, because I feel like I've been seeing him in big playoff games every single year since he was like 19. But he's still really young. So am I going to fucking trade a Jaylen Brown and get back 30-year-old Andrew Wiggins? Like, who? Like, I've got to get fucking – I've got to get either return value or more value. Otherwise, I'm hanging up the fucking phone. And unless Brown is knocking on the GM's office door going, get me the fuck out of here. I want out of here. I don't care. I'm done. I'm over it. You got to figure it out, or you got to get that fucking value, that return value or more. Give me some thoughts on what I'm saying here, Jess.
No, I absolutely agree. Jaylen Brown is he's still a prospect. If you want to, if I can use that term, I believe that he's still a prospect. I don't think that he's reached his full potential. And the reason he's not reached his full potential is basically what you said earlier. And partly maybe due to this whole disinterest in the game is because Jason Tatum is the guy. They expect him to take the ball. They expect him to play, be playmaker with the ball. Brown is just kind of regulated as secondary or third, you know, third guy back. And I believe that Jaylen Brown has enough ball skills to be a number one or a number two guy and be very, very involved in the basketball game. Could you imagine a Jaylen Brown playing with the Denver Nuggets?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Murray and Jokic running that pick and roll. Like when I watch Jokic and Murray play pick and roll, it's like watching Stockton and Malone.
But better.
They're both more athletically. Like
it
just
sounds
able
crazy
to
say,
better.
But it is better.
And imagine having a guy not like an Aaron Gordon, but who doesn't really score a whole lot anymore. Doesn't. He's basically Aaron Gordon's like a defender now. But imagine having a Jaylen Brown out there instead. That team wins multiple championships if they can stay healthy.
That's
and then Jaylen Brown's happy every game, and he's very interested in his role in that team. And right now, what you're seeing is, you know, like you said, he's young. So whoever's going to try to trade him is the Celtics are going to want max value. And it's going to be hard to get max value for Jaylen Brown, especially after watching him play this year, at least in the postseason, and kind of like sputter from game to game. Hard to get max value when you sit there and try to tell another team like, hey, Portland Trailblazers, we have Jaylen Brown on the market and we have a couple guys that we're interested on your squad. We'd like to try to make a swap and including a couple draft picks back and forth. And then the Blazers say, well, you know, Shaedon Sharpe is actually like an up and coming guy and he's only 21.
Yeah.
Jaylen is 26. I don't know if I'm comfortable doing that trade. And you don't really have the draft picks that are going to possibly put me back up into the lottery pick next season.
Wow.
So I'm going to pass.
Jess, let me throw that trade at you right now because I'm already salivating thinking about it.
Do it.
Jaylen Brown for Dame and the Blazers pick, that lottery pick. If you're Portland, do you do that?
No.
You serious? If I'm Portland, I take that. If I'm Portland, I do that in a heartbeat.
This is what I would do. This is the trade I would get Boston for Jaylen Brown. If I'm the Blazers, I would – Anthony Simons, who's very young still, got a lot of
big shooter some, kid. He's got upside. I get it. You're not giving him their best.
He's got
he's
some
not
upside.
Giving them your
and
best
then prospect. I would – and then I would give them the number three or whatever pick.
And no Dame?
No, Dame. I want Jaylen and Dame to play together. I want if I'm the Blazers, what I'm looking for, if I'm looking for that trade, I'm looking for Dame. I'm looking for Shaedon Sharpe, who blossomed into potential star guy last season. And then bring Jaylen Brown in. I think those are the.
I think
I'll give you anybody else in Portland except for Shaedon Sharpe and Damian Lillard.
I can't believe. So you got to understand, Jess, we're doing, you got to do an all-star for an all-star. This is my point. This is exactly what I'm saying. If I am, so first of all, if I'm Portland, I do that trade because Dame is over 30. Jaylen Brown's fucking 26 and he's got a ton of upside. And now I've got Sharp. Now I've got Brown. And now I've got some other young pieces. Now I know you're losing that lottery pick, which hurts.
They can't use it anyway.
But oh, there's that too. But maybe Brown ends up. Maybe Brown ends up being what Tatum is. Maybe he ends up going, all right, now I'm out of that shell. Now I can be the guy. Now I can give you a 28-8 every night without having to facilitate or having to fucking wait for Tatum to get his. I don't know. And those fans would love him too. Now, if I'm Boston, I don't know if I do that trade. If I'm Boston, that's where it gets interesting. If I'm Boston, do I do that trade? I don't know, because Dame is, again, he's really getting up there in age. Got a lot of mileage.
To put Damian Lillard and Jason Tatum on the same court at the same time is going to be enough for Boston fans to go nuts.
That will, and that's what I'm saying. That you. So this is my point. If you're going to make that, if you're going to trade Brown, you've got to be getting – insane value for him, something like a Dame, and I can and picks. I don't even think straight up. I think Boston loses. I think if Portland called Boston right now and went, hey, listen, you guys are in a world of fucking trouble going into next year. You're clearly firing your coach. We'll tell you what, let's just do a straight up right now. We'll give you fucking Dame. You gave us Jaylen. We'll figure this out. We'll do a sign trade right now for, and we'll pay Jaylen and fuck max him out. I don't think Boston does that. I think they look at Dame and they go, God, he's got a lot of mileage. Even though you are right, Jess, you pair him up with Tatum, and now all of a sudden you've got a fucking great backcourt. And not only that, you've got he's got a true, I don't want to say a true point guard, because I know Dame can go Dame, but Dame can also facilitate a lot better than Smart can.
Yeah.
So sure. I love that. All right. So we spent some good time on Boston. Any
well, you know what's funny is we spent all this time on Boston and didn't do shit for Miami. Miami's about to punch them straight out the playoffs, and we're just like, congratulations, Heat Nation. We love you guys.
Because we're gonna give our finals picks here, so we'll spend a little bit more time on Miami. Trust me.
All right, here we go.
There's no reason. So I'm assuming here next week we may not do a show. I'm already kind of putting that in your ear.
That's true.
So we might as well give our finals pick right now.
Oh, we will.
Let's go to Denver, LA.
Are we gonna move?
This is why I want to make sure that we've got at least 15, 20 minutes.
This is fucking Hollywood right here.
Because I want to give you and myself proper time, because I think either one of us can take the ball and fucking run for 80 yards on this one. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to open it up to you. LeBron James swept in the finals. I've been talking about Denver since I said when the playoffs started, hey, watch out for Denver. I know they're a number one seed, but they might fuck around and get to the finals here. They stayed healthy. They really just outplayed L.A. I don't want to say on both sides of the ball, because L.A.'s defense did show up, but they're just so – I mean, listen, I'll get into my thoughts on this for a second, but go ahead, Jess. Let's let you open it up.
The biggest game changer for the Denver Nuggets throughout the entire postseason has been their health.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago I seen them get booted out of the playoffs. It looked to me, I think that I had even picked them to go to the NBA Finals. It might have been when the Phoenix Suns did a couple years or so ago back. But Jamal Murray had gotten hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And they were playing some second and third, you know, string dudes to fill in. And that's when I realized how important Jamal Murray is to this squad among some of these other guys, like the, you know, the Jeff Greens and the Bruce Browns and like some of these guys that like don't really get a lot of recognition, because Denver is not a nationally televised basketball team. You know what I mean? Like,
which is wild.
It is wild. If you go back and look at the last 5 years where their record has been, like the wins, holy shit. And then not to mention that potentially for the past 3 years, they've owned the best player in basketball, Nikola Jokic. So the health of the Denver Nuggets has been the key to everything, to their success. Aaron Gordon has managed to stay healthy, Michael Porter Jr. has managed to stay healthy. Like, if you look back, like, these guys have a terrible track record with staying healthy. And then not only that, but Jamal Murray came off that terrible injury not too long ago, worked his way back in slowly last season. The Nuggets were definitely not at full speed. This season, Murray came back healthy. He's been pissed at the world, and he's taken it out on every point guard that has faced him. And in the postseason, Jamal Murray has done nothing but put up immaculate numbers that you would not expect a guy like him to put up. And he's just going out there scoring 30, 35 points a game alongside of Jokic. And then you get, like, you know, your 8 and 12 rebounds from an Aaron Gordon, plus the guy plays defense. Then Jeff Green comes in and gets some rebounds, plays some defense. Everybody plays the role. That's why, I mean, we talk about the Miami Heat and how everybody just comes in and plays their part. Well, the Denver Nuggets do the same thing. They know that the offense goes through Jokic, but the handler is Jamal Murray. Mm-hmm. And Murray can call the audible at any point in time. And their outside shooters, like your Michael Porter Juniors and so on, those guys, they just move. They move so well. Not like the Golden State Warriors of the past 3, 5, 6 years, like not that type of baseline type run, but they move around enough to get open and stay open. And so if Murray wants to call the audible, he'll kick it out to an MPJ and he'll shoot the tray. You know what I mean? Or they'll kick it inside to an Aaron Gordon who just happens to be open because everybody else is looking to see where Joker's at.
I think you're really on this one, Jess. So a few things here. The thing with Joker is, and I've said this so many years since we've started doing this podcast, the teams that play well together, the teams that have had the same group of 3, 4, 5 guys for 4, 5, 6, 7 years, and they're able to stay healthy, those are the most dangerous teams.
They are.
Because point guard knows where big man's sweet spot is. And in this case, big man knows where all of the shooter's sweet spots are on a totally different level than what we've seen in a very long time. The way that Jokic is able to go, I'm on the right side of the wing, and I know Porter's going to roll out to the right side of the arc, and I know he likes to have it in his right hand, and he likes it by his hip. So let me make sure that I'm right here at this point, because this is going to be the best place to put it where he wants it, because he's going to fire this bitch up. That is playing together, the unity of playing together for a long time, practicing together for a long time. This is what I was preaching with the Suns. This is what I've been preaching going back to when KD went to the Nets. You've got to practice with your teammates. You've got to play with your teammates in several games, not just 20 to 25. You've got to collectively know, I know when my man is tired. I know when my teammates is running out of gas. I know where my teammate's sweet spot is. I know where my teammate lacks defensively. So let me make sure I can pick that up. Those are the secrets that Denver has all figured out, because they've all played together for all these years because they're all healthy right now. Yeah. And that's how, and you said it again, you said it the best. There comes a moment when there's 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, and I say this every week, and there's only 7, 8 possessions left, and Mike Malone can just throw the whiteboard to Joker and go, all right, you two fucking figure it out. I'm going to sit over here with a Pepsi and just
– Definitely can't do that in Boston, but they can do it right now in Denver.
Hey, Memphis Zula fuck can't do that. That guy's fucking breaking clipboards and fucking sweating out of his shirt. And Joker gets the clipboard and goes, hey, everybody, I know where you guys like to be. But right now, it's just going to be pick and roll, me and Jamal, because we're exposing them defensively. And then they did it. Part of Murray's – so, and you know this, Jess, because we've been discussing Jamal Murray for the past 2 or 3 years, but it's always if he's healthy,
yes.
if he's healthy. Man, if him and Porter can stay healthy, whoo, boy. Well, they've done it. We've reached whoo, boy, because they're both healthy enough to stay on the court for meaningful minutes. And Porter, has that long, lengthy jump shot that is difficult to block and difficult to obstruct. And Jokic is able to find Murray in pockets where he can just get his shot up. And they're also, like you mentioned here, stealing your thunder, Aaron Gordon has just been fucking incredible in these playoffs as like a fourth option. And he's good with being a fourth option. He's good with going, I'm going to play LeBron as tough as I can every fucking night. And I know some nights he's going to get his, but I'm going to make it difficult every single shot. I'm going to have a hand up in his shit every single shot. I'm going to have an elbow up in his chest every single fucking time he goes to the basket. I'm going to give hard playoff fouls. That's what I'm here for. And when I'm opening around the basket, give me the ball. I'm a high percentage dude. Throw me some lobs. A lot of those lobs didn't work because AD and LeBron were just smart enough and athletic enough to stay around the basket. But you've seen Aaron Gordon getting a lot of tip-ins.
Aaron Gordon's got hops. Let's not forget, I believe he was fucking a slam dunk contest. Champion.
Yep, exactly. So I look at all these things and I go, man, they just really have fucking figured it out there. And they've put everything together.
It's the kismet kind of thing. It's like the, you know, you meet somebody for the first time and you just know. Like, that's the one. This is the for me, that's what it is for the Denver Nuggets in this championship run. Like, they're all healthy. Everything's going in the way it's supposed to be. There's that 50%, like, we know what we're doing. And then there's also the other 50% of, like, just lucky shit falls their way. Jokic is falling off of one leg, jumping backwards to hit a three-pointer with no time on the shot clock.
That was Dirk. That was Dirk Nowitzki.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. But normal people don't make that shot.
Normal ballers don't make that shot. Professional basketball players.
That is what I like to call the kiss from the basketball gods.
So let me say this. And I know you've been watching a lot of Joker these last 2 weeks. He is Hakeem Olajuwon, Kevin McHale, Bill Walton, Charles Barkley, all rolled into one fat doink. He really can do fucking everything right now. If he wants to bully ball you like Barkley, he's going to do it. If he wants to show a little bit of finesse like Hakeem, he can do it. If he wants to one foot you like Dirk, he can do it. He can fucking do it all. And to me, he is playing at the Hakeem Olajuwon back-to-back MVP level. I was with my shout out to my boys. I was with the other night when we after the Laker game, and my buddy, lifetime Laker fan, went, "This reminds me so much of Dirk when Dirk won the championship, and he was just better than everybody that year. We got to the finals, and he just found a way to be better than everybody, and that's what Jokic's doing right now. That's what you expect multiple time MVPs to do. He's doing it under the bright lights. He basically, I don't want to see single-handedly, but he really did embarrass the Lakers. For them to get swept like this after all those moves they made, to the point where LeBron at the end of the game last night on the podium's like, yeah, I don't know if I want to play basketball next year. Fuck.
It was in his defense, and I don't come to his defense often. In his defense, his series against Golden State was not very, like, there wasn't a lot of it wasn't a lot of aggression. He wasn't bullied a lot.
Yeah, he could be passive.
He had time to relax and look for shots, and both teams were looking to be more offensive than defensive. And then he comes into a series where, like, Jokic loves to get physical. Like, he will be the physical guy.
I'm telling you, just when you, and I don't know where the numbers are. I'm sure you can pull up the numbers. A lot of times, the switches were to Aaron Gordon.
Yes.
And Aaron Gordon gave him fucking fits.
And in the face all the time.
And I know people are going to point to that last game and go, well, LeBron went absolutely bananas. And he did. And guess what? KD went bananas against Aaron Gordon. Like, the best NBA players in the world offensively are going to get theirs. It's just, let me make sure I can stop them when it matters. Let me make sure I can, Let me make sure they ain't getting theirs when it matters. And you look
that's
at
what
that.
They did.
You look at those last two possessions when the Lakers were down and LeBron has Gordon on him and he misses that fadeaway, hits the fucking side of the backboard. And you look at the last 3 to 5 seconds, the last 4 second possession there when Jamal Murray basically strips him of the fucking ball and Aaron Gordon's on the flat side going, you're not getting to this basket. That's great defense by the Nuggets. Jess, what do the Lakers do? This is really where we're at. And again, we're going to spend a few moments on this. But if you're Pelinka, if you're Buss, and LeBron's kind of doing this thing, let's assume LeBron's back next year. What do you do?
My assumption is LeBron's back. I think that he's got another year to 2 years of like pretty – I mean, the guy averaged nearly 30 points a game this season. So it's not
the window,
like
– The window's closing, though, Jeff.
I mean, yes, I will agree that his window is slightly closed. But as far as championship runs, yes. Playing time, he's still got the goods to come in and play in the NBA. Like, he's still a top-tier level NBA basketball player. So my assumption is he returns to L.A. for what? This will be like his sixth season now in L.A., something like that? But here's where it gets tricky. I think that they have to trade AD.
Oof. Wow. That's a hot take. I wasn't ready for that.
I like the role players that they put around LeBron. I like, you know, Austin Reeves. I like all the other guys that they got going on over there. I know that the offseason they're going to have to pick up more. But they're going to have to make a big splash trade for a lot of teams don't mind playing small ball. Like Golden State's been doing it for the past decade. So, and they won multiple championships during that time. I think the Lakers have to go to a more small ball style. Anthony Davis, his frame, his build, it is not built to last an entire NBA season. And although in the postseason he hasn't dealt with injuries as much, there have been times where he's gotten a little banged up and had to sit for periods of time.
I remember he got concussed in the Warriors game.
He did. He got concussed in that game, didn't even come back. So I like the fact that people will come to AD's defense and be like, well, the Lakers wouldn't be shit without him. They could actually leave LeBron and just stack somebody else in with AD. That's good in theory. But LeBron's probably played more minutes than AD has. And LeBron James will be 39 years old this year. So there's no excuse for a guy who's still like, you know, I don't know if AD's 30 yet, but he's probably in that range maybe. There's no excuse for that guy, as athletically gifted as he is, to play less minutes than a nearly 40-year-old man. So to me, the Lakers have to move on from AD, but they piece back in order to do it. And it's going to be tough.
I have AD thoughts, but I want to throw this at you first.
Okay.
If you're the Lakers brass, do you overpay Austin Reeves, a.k.a. AR-15?
Yes.
If you're the Lakers brass, do you overpay Hachimura?
No. He can go.
Oh. So my next question was going to be if you could only pick one, but you just gave Hachimura the boot. Wow, I was not ready for that. Hey, can I trade AD to the Celtics for Jaylen Brown straight up? Can we do that? I mean, Jaylen Brown and Lakers, dude. Could you imagine? I mean, an AD.
That would be a great pairing because, again, like if what you're banking on is for Jaylen Brown to kind of come into his own and become more offensively, you know, pushed in that direction and, like, can't over games, not necessarily be the scorer that Tatum is, but, you know, maybe put up 26, 27 a game, possibly. Who better to do that with than a guy like LeBron James? And then you got all these role players that are sitting there like your AR-15s and all the other guys that the Lakers have been coming up with. Like, if you can keep most of the team that the Lakers have, but trade AD for, man, a guy like Jaylen Brown, man, I'm telling you, that team's dangerous next season. Dangerous.
AR-15 is going to be a fringe all-star next year. You can go ahead and board that. So let me give this AD take. I'm not ready to give up on him yet again because I just saw him fight. Okay, there's two reasons. One, I just saw him dominate a good section of the playoffs. He gave the Grizzlies fits, and he basically single-handedly beat my Warriors. That to me holds a lot of weight. The second thing, are we really going to say, well, AD couldn't stop Jokic? No one's stopping that motherfucker. Like, no one is stopping him. I don't care. Outside of doubling him with LeBron and AD, where you're throwing your two biggest bodies at him, when was he being stopped? Never. He was the only person stopping himself. There's a reason he just passed Wilt Chamberlain in the all-time numbers, because he's just putting up triple-doubles because they can't stop him. So I don't know if I'm ready to say trade AD or he's done. But I'll tell you what, my group chat, two of my group chats, this motherfucker, his ears have to be ringing because he gets destroyed more than any fucking player that I can think of. He really does. He gets fucking destroyed. And again, it's tough, Jess, because when he's on, he's phenomenal. You saw those Warriors games. I mean, he destroyed us. But then there's games like last night. Where is he in the fourth quarter? Why were there so many games in this series he just didn't show up in the fourth quarter when you need him to show up?
Is it like a personal trainer thing? Like, does his personal trainer, he can't like figure out a way to put weight on his body or something?
I don't know.
Like,
dude, you've been in the league 10 years.
I watched Jokic body the shit out of him in the paint. Like, and Anthony Davis is top tier defender in this league, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the best. And what, didn't he win Defensive Player of the Year this year or something like that?
I don't know if he won it this year, but he's won it in the past.
But I'm telling you, Jokic treated him like a rag doll in the paint.
When he does bull in a China shop, it's like Barkley. I don't want to say it's like Shaq, but it's fucking close.
It's like, not Shaq-like, no, but it...
But it's Barkley-like, or it's like
C-like. Definitely, yes. I mean, I can agree with that.
It's not the grace that we're used to seeing, but you're like... No one's getting in front of him. No one's stopping him. He's fucking bulling a China shop. He's gonna get to the basket and he's gonna get a 1-inch layup, like with his 2-inch vert. There's no fucking stopping it. If you're LeBron, give me the LeBron window with the LA Lakers. I'm gonna go over under 2 years.
Under.
It just feels like he's got one more year in a Lakers jersey, and he goes to wherever the fuck his son is next year.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I think he gives the Lakers season. He said he goes to the brass and he says, "Hey guys, this is what I'm going to stay here this season. You got me for one season. Make this count. Pull off all the damn trades you need to do, the shady backdoor deals, whatever you got to do to get in a guy like Dame, get in a guy like Jaylen Brown, get in whoever you want." But bring him in because I want to win a championship. If you can't win, if you can't give me a reason to stay by helping me win a championship, I'm bouncing to Orlando. I'm bouncing to wherever my son gets drafted to next season.
One wild trade that I just thought of in my head right now. Are you ready?
Let's hear it.
AD for Draymond. Not straight up. Poole, even though they may not want to touch him with a 10-foot pole. Wiggs and a pick. Whatever the Warriors first round pick is, like fucking 29 or some dumb shit.
I mean, if they have the money, it sounds like a good deal.
If you're the Lakers, you take that call, you think about it?
You at least take the call. You at least think about it. You know what? If I'm the owner, GM guy, whoever, That's a close, like, let's do it right now kind of trade.
Because you're going to lose Hachimura, you're going to lose Hachimura no matter what. Yeah. I'm a firm believer in somebody is going to overpay him. So, you like you said, Jess, you run small ball. You run Dre at the 5. You run LeBron at the 4 or the 3. You run Wiggins at the 5, whatever, the 3, I guess. You'd have LeBron at the 4. You can make it happen.
And Poole can start. Maybe he blossoms into this, you know, stud Jalen Brunson kind of, you know,
Would you rather have? Would you rather right now, for the next 3 years, have D'Lo or Jordan Poole?
Poole.
It almost feels like a done deal.
Yeah.
Poole. We've seen bad D'Lo, and we've seen it for several years now. We know he can completely disappear. Jordan is still 23 or if even.
I think like might even be 22.
Yeah, like he's still young. He's got a lot of fucking time before we go like, all right, the milk's gone bad already. He is who he is. That motherfucker's not changing. We got time. All right. Jess, I think we've pretty much poked all the holes we can in the Lakers. Is there any other Lakers Ham? You keep Ham, right? Or do you get rid of Ham?
I think the team likes him. I think the players like him. Most importantly, I think LeBron likes him. So
that's it.
You got to keep him.
Is there any chance LeBron?
Besides, I watched that motherfucker break a backboard in college. So
I'm there cool it is. Do you think there's any chance that LeBron goes, hey, this coach is out here. I want you to take a shot at him.
No,
I don't know who the coach is.
I've looked at free coaches because I'm in shock and awe of some of the releases that have just recently happened. I've looked at the coaches that are out there. I wouldn't have even released Monty Williams. That's fucked up.
Hmm. Jess, I think you touched on this a little bit last week, and I'm going to touch on it really quickly, and then we'll pick our finals. I believe the league is starting to shift away from players' coaches and more towards your pop guys, more towards your bud guys, even though he just got fired. I think he's going to get a job real quick. I think they're looking for the Kenny Atkinson. He might get a job here soon. They want clipboard guys. They want smart guys. They want basketball mind guys. They don't want players coaches anymore. I think the days of Doc are fucking numbered. Now, Doc will get a job because he's Doc, but you know what I'm saying here. All right, Jess, we're going to go to our finals pick. I think you had the Lakers going to the finals. Did you have the Lakers going to the finals?
No, I had Denver going to the finals.
Sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Positive. You can go back. You can go soundtrack.
I had the Warriors. I'll tell you that full confidence. I fucked that one up. I am almost positive none of us have the Heat. It's just
no. I think we both picked Boston.
Either that or Milwaukee.
Well, no, I take it back. I think we both picked Milwaukee, and then when we had shifting games, we picked Boston.
All right. You got the Miami Heat culture. You got the Denver Nuggets. Who you got, Jess?
I have the Denver Nuggets in six.
Yeah, that feels like the number.
I already gave the Lakers. I said the Lakers were going to give Denver fits. I think I said Denver in six, that series too.
We both did.
And that definitely didn't turn out right. What I've seen is a shift in that Denver locker room, and they are no longer the underdogs. They are proudly on the mantle of we are the ones to beat.
They are coming for the fucking crown. They have went from the hunted to the hunter, and they are coming for the fucking crown.
Yeah, it's been amazing to watch. Like, if you're a basketball fan, you have to be paying attention to the Denver Nuggets because, like Jay said, like, we've been talking about this Nuggets team for quite a long time now, and they were the underdogs, then they were the injured guys, and then they were the underdogs again, and they were the underdogs this season, even though they're out there whooping teams' asses. Like,
the number one seed, and I don't think anyone picked them to go to the finals.
No, I don't think anybody picked them to go to the finals. Number one seed, most wins in their division and in conference, and here we are. They no longer are the underdogs. They are now, you need to beat us. You cannot beat us. You need to try, but you won't. And they want that championship ring. It's been amazing to watch. The Miami Heat, they are an amazing ball club. That, again, can't talk enough great things about Heat culture and what's happened in Miami with that coaching staff, with the ownership, with the players that they bring in. Jimmy Buckets is just a different cat. Like, you know, he's just wired different. Like, and people love him for it, man. And he's got that locker room believing that they can beat anybody in the world. And they're one game away tonight from possibly sweeping the Boston Celtics, which is crazy. They're an eighth seed. They shouldn't be doing this, but yet they're one game away. So, but when you look at matchups, the matchups are bad. They're not in Miami's favor. Denver can also play defense, and they have the ultimate equalizer. That's Nikola Jokic. They have no one in that Miami locker room can guard Jokic, not even close. They will have to double and triple team him, and if you do that, you leave guys open, and those guys can all hit shots. So
he will destroy you.
Denver in six.
I try and think about it like this now. how many games can Miami muck it up and turn into an Eastern type of game? Maybe two. I think they're just going to have a problem scoring with Denver. I think if Denver went in 4 or 5, it would not surprise me, because they're scoring so many fucking points. We're going to have that game where they put up 120 or 130 on Miami, and Miami's going to walk off of that floor with that "what the fuck just happened to us" look. We weren't ready. We were never ready. I like Denver. I think Denver continues to steamroll. And again, we've said it for 2 months or fucking 6 weeks. Let's say it another week. As long as Jamal and Michael Porter Jr. can stay healthy, they are going to give Miami absolute fits. I've just seen Jokic dominate Ayton. I've just seen Jokic dominate AD. I've just seen Jokic dominate Kat and Rudy Gobert. Now you're going to tell me that Bam is going to be the guy that stops him? I'm a Bam guy. I ain't buying it. I like Denver, and I'm going to go 5, Jess. I'm buying 5. I just can't see Miami having that game where it's like, oh, damn, Denver only scored 80 tonight. And Miami won 86-82. Like, I don't see that. Miami's going to have a lot of high-scoring games where they're scoring over 100. They've got to have 110, 120-point games. And I want to see them do that in the altitude. That shit ain't happening, Jess. I like Denver in 5.
Well, there you go, folks. NBA Finals, we have it. Presumably speaking, that Miami will eventually close out this series against Boston, whether it's tonight or in a couple days. But eventually, we believe that, again, we're basing this on history. No team has ever come back from 3 down. So if history maintains, Miami will go to the NBA Finals and face off against the Denver Nuggets. And we fully believe in the Denver Nuggets right now. And I agree with Jay. As long as everybody stays healthy, your Michael Porter Jr.'s, your Jamal Murray's, your Jeff Green's, your, you know, down the line, as long as those guys stay healthy and Jokic is Jokic, there ain't no way Miami's beating them.
That's it. Hit the wrap it up button, Jess. Oh, let me do the shout outs really quick.
Yeah, do it.
I'm doing our Twitter shout outs now because Jesse is now gone from Twitter. Shout out Fat Boy Fadeaway Sports. Shout out Variety Sports Network. Shout out our boy Al Wallen. Shout out Che Rollins. Shout out Justin Van Doom. Von Doom. Where did the van come from? I'm thinking of Rob Van Dam. That's probably why. We gave Jimmy Evans so much love at the beginning of the show. I am refusing to give him any more love than what he has already gotten. Shout out Smash Squad MMA. Shout out everyone supporting the show. Shout out everyone supporting at Team Toss 21. If you follow us, we will follow you back. And that's all I got, Jess.
Yeah, thanks to anybody that's asked about me out there in Twitter world. I appreciate you all. Everybody that Jay just mentioned is basically our core squad. You know that I love you guys. And when I come back, I'll let you all know for sure.
Shout out B-Black, too. B-Black 559. We love you, buddy.
Yes. Variety Sports Network. Please follow Variety Sports Network _ Variety or Variety _ Sports _. So there's that one. Folks, the week. Enjoy the fights not coming up until next week, but please enjoy the NBA, the rest of the NBA games, because the playoffs have been magnificent this season. We're out.
Peace.